And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blast-off. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
It's about 8 minutes after the hour of 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. It's November 13th. It's a Sunday, and it's program 130 in the series of the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious, effervescent, and very dimpled Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl?
We have Elif Garis, our producer. She was born in Turkey, but she's no turkey when it comes to producing the show. Oh, what happened? My rim shot didn't play.
Aw,
man.
Happy Sunday.
What's going on? My rim shot didn't play. How are you, Elif?
I am doing well.
Isn't she a little cutie in there?
Aww,
she's a cutie patootie, that Elif.
I am.
So we have detective shows. Humble, too. We have detective shows for our listeners. We have Candy Mattson, who was a no-nonsense female detective. You didn't want to mess with Candy Mattson. And then we have Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey. And then Boston Blackie with Dick Calamari. We have three classic radio detective shows for you, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor will direct and star in the upcoming film Witness for the Prosecution, an adaptation of the Agatha Christie play that first hit the big screen in 1957.
All right.
And the winner will get a Christmas package, including the Lightkeeper Pro.
Right. And there's that stuff you spray, too, which I use as deodorant around Christmas time. Makes me smell like a tree.
Yeah. You normally smell a little bit tree-like.
Yeah.
So it's perfect for you. Yes.
It's great stuff.
A scent keeper and a Lightkeeper Pro.
So I use the scent keeper.
You need a little scent keeping.
And here's a hint. Well, the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor is the new Bruce Wayne, and you'll hear him in this clip from The Town.
They don't have any suspects, any clues, any leads, anything like that.
There you go. You know that actor? 312-981-7200. Give us a call. Win a Lightkeeper Pro and some Scentkeeper Pro, too, as well. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
We're back. You found us. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop, and let's play it again.
They don't have any suspects, any clues, any leads, anything like that. Right.
And we have Christopher on the phone from Champaign, Illinois. Hey, Christopher.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Great. I'm glad you called in. And who is that actor?
That is Ben Affleck.
Carl, Ben Affleck is right. Christopher, you are a winner. You've won the Lightkeeper Pro in a Christmas package. It's your complete tool for repairing holiday light scents and a scent keeper, what Carl uses as deodorant, but you can use it for your real Christmas tree scent on your artificial tree. Do you put up a tree for Christmas?
What artificial tree? It's easy to put up and put down, so that should go really quite nicely.
Perfect. Well, I love Champagne. I went to school there, and I'm so glad you called in. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you drink a lot of Champagne.
I don't drink
you
but I did go to school there for a while.
Too many Martoonies.
No.
It's a great town.
It is a great town. I love it. Take care, Christopher.
Thank you.
Thanks, Christopher. All right. Yeah, when you were driving here and the police pulled you over, you were like, Ossifer, I had too many of my tunes.
I think you were talking about Elif.
Yeah,
you said
I know.
That.
She's quite the drinker.
Thanks for outing me.
So sorry.
Are ready for our first classic radio detective adventure for this evening?
Yes, we've had a lot of talk about Candy Mattson.
Candy Mattson. Right, it was a detective show, came to NBC Radio in 1949. Natalie Masters starred as the female private investigator. She didn't have a trace of squeamishness, let me tell you that. And she had a very wry sense of humor. And she lived in a penthouse on Telegraph Hill in San Francisco. So she was doing pretty good for herself, that little Candy Matson. She was in love with police detective Ray Mallard, played by Henry Leff. And the series concluded with Ray finally proposing to her. She accepted and then retired from the detective business. The series ended in 1951. We have an episode for you now called The Devil in the Deep Freeze. It stars Natalie Masters from September 30th, 1949. Here's part one now of Candy Matson Detective.
Hello, Yukon 28209. Yes, this is Candy Matson.
Got an old corpse kicking around you want identified? Know of any good murders you want solved? We've got just the girl for you. Her name is Candy Matson. Mighty cute, too. She fills out a size 12 suit to just the right proportions. Soft blonde hair, two sparkling blue eyes, and all in all, she looks as though she might have stepped right off of Aga Calendar. And what's more, she's a private eye. You scoff? You ridicule? I'll let you see for yourselves. Listen, she's talking on the phone right now.
Hello, Candy Matson.
Hello, Miss Matson. I'm afraid you don't know me.
That makes it even. You don't know me. Let's go from there.
I've read about you in the papers, Miss Matson. You handle confidential cases.
That's right. However, there's a little matter of a fee involved.
Yes, yes, I know. I can pay.
That's item number one. Now to item number two. What's the confidential case?
I can't possibly tell you on the phone, Miss Matson. I said it was confidential.
Okay. Where do you want to talk?
I am the proprietor of a restaurant, the Charlemagne in North Beach.
Oh, yeah. I ate there once.
Oh, that's nice.
No, it wasn't. I didn't like the food.
Oh.
However, I'll overlook it. Do you want to talk in about an hour?
That will be fine, Miss Matson.
Good. And your name would be...
Martinello. Carlo Martinello.
Okay, Mr. Martinello. And have some ink in your pen. It costs money just to talk. I probably sounded rough and commercial, but you have to be in this racket. Most people look on a private eye as a musician. They invite you to a party and expect you to bring your harp for free. But I learned the hard way a long time ago. So now they pay in advance and take their chances later. That's the way it was with this Martinello. I was at home in my penthouse on Telegraph Hill out on the porch taking a sunbath when the phone rings and it's this Carlo character. That part was all right because I can always use new customers. But what made me mad was the fact that I had to stop listening to the 49ers belt the bejabers out of the Cleveland Browns at Kezar Stadium. But I followed through and uncovered a couple of very done-in bodies along the way. Do you like the grotesque in your whodunits? Then follow me and we'll tiptoe lightly through the Tibbets, the Ponds, and the Baccalonies, because part of this story unfolds at the Opera House. Reluctantly, I dressed into something Charlemagne-ish, turned off the 49ers Cleveland game, and went down to talk to Martinello. His place was typical, located on Powell Street, a garish neon sign, and as you walked in, the place was air-conditioned by eau de garlic.
Yes, miss. You wish a table?
I wish a table, yes. With the right party. I'm looking for the owner.
I am the owner.
I am Candy Matson.
Oh, Miss Matson. Walk this way, please.
If I could walk that way, I'd revive vaudeville.
Pardon?
Where is your office?
Right over here. Allow me. After you, signorina.
Thank you, signor.
Here. Sit down, please.
Thanks. Now, Martinello, what's on your mind?
Always, all my life, I have run a very nice, respectable place. Until this morning.
What's with this morning?
I go down to the basement. My icebox is down there. That is where I keep all my meat.
So, you wanted some ground round?
Oh, no, no. Perhaps I'd better show you. Please, you will come with me.
Martinello led the way out of his office and down a flight of stairs. A cold blast hit my face. A musty aroma smothered my nostrils, and if I had had a phobia about darkness, I'd have ducked out then. But I followed the guy, and we ended up in front of a refrigerator about the size of an Inquisition chamber. He opened the door, and It was the usual restaurant icebox, choice legs of lamb hanging from hooks, potential fillets and thick New York cuts. The box was cold and I started to shiver. Not from the refrigeration, though, because over in the corner was a man. He looked like something out of a long-lost Arctic expedition. He had a long, flowing mustache, every bristle of which was coated with ice. He was quite frozen and quite dead. I slammed the door shut and reeled out. The sight had staggered my thought processes. Martinello reached over by a salami slicing table and turned on a Mazda, a weak affair that cast dim shadows about the damp basement. Is that your little surprise?
Yes, Mr. Matson. That is what I was greeted with this morning.
Have you notified the police?
Oh, no, no, no.
Why not?
As I told you, I have run a very respectable place. And, too, that is why I am hiring you.
You can get in trouble, you know.
Yes, yes, that is why you must help me. Please, please, Miss Madsen, say you will help me. I will pay you anything you say.
I stick my neck out in the strangest places. Now it's a refrigerator. Okay, Martinello, $2,000.
What?
Make up your mind. Either I freeze your assets or the police find your frozen friend.
Yes. All right. Come. I give you the money now.
Now we're getting somewhere.
What about him?
Oh, he'll keep. He's on ice. Well, this was one for the books. Refrigeration the ugly way. I had to ask a few questions if I was to get anywhere, such as, like, do you know the guy?
No.
Had you ever seen him before?
No.
Who was the last one to close the icebox last night?
I was.
Does it lock from the inside?
Unfortunately, yes.
I was getting places like Wiley was with Hauser. It was inevitable. I had to take my courage in my hand and go down and look at that thing again. There it was, a male Mona Lisa etched in ice. This time I looked closer, I had to. And as I did, I realized I wasn't going to get any identification because this guy was a study in crimson. Underneath all that coating of ice, he was dressed in a devil's costume. I slammed the door once again and went upstairs. There I gave Martinello strict orders not to do a thing. Usually in cases like this, you have to wait for a break. They come along like a forcing hand in poker. So I went home to do some thinking. As I arrived, there was an old friend of mine, Rembrandt Watson.
Hello, Dove. I'd almost given up.
Rembrandt, how did you get in?
Your door was open, dear. I took the liberty of coming in.
Oh, sure, that's okay.
How are things, Candy?
All right, I guess. I'm kind of bush, though. I feel about as devaluated as a British pound.
You look wonderful, Dove. What's wrong?
I've got a deal, but I don't know where to start.
Anything I can help you with?
No, thanks, Rembrandt. If I told you about it, you wouldn't believe it.
I've never doubted you in the past, dear.
I know. Well, I was just called in by a minestrone merchant in North Beach. The guy is stuck with a corpse.
That's about par for the course.
The deceased had been sealed in the icebox overnight. I've never seen one like that before.
That's the way it is, dear. Many are called, but few are frozen.
Oh, get out of here.
But, Dove, I just got here.
I know, but I've got to change and get down to see Mallard.
I'll wait for you, Candy. I haven't seen the gumshoe since before me vacation.
All right. I'll be with you in a few moments. I did a fast change, and Rembrandt and I climbed into my car, and we dropped off Telegraph Hill on Don Kearney Street. The Hall of Justice, where Mallard hangs his star, is only a few blocks away, so we made it in about 5 minutes. Inspector Ray Mallard, Homicide, San Francisco Police. A lovable, shaggy dog type of character. Very keen with the crime, but dumb with a dame. Me, for instance. If I want him to say yes, he says no, and vice versa.
Well, my ever-loving Candy, what's new in the private eye business?
Very little. How's the legitimate flatfoot racket?
Oh, we're holding our arches up. Well, and Rembrandt. I haven't seen you since Pup was a Hector.
Please, Inspector, you're meting your mixer paws.
Who writes this dialogue?
I'm pretty weak, I know. What's on your mind, Candy?
A character named Carlo Martinello. Have you got anything on him? What's so funny, Mallard?
Nothing, except I eat lunch there about every day of the week.
Well, answer my question.
There's nothing on Martinello. Arrested a couple of times during Prohibition. He was dabbling in grappa a la under the table. Have you's got a case against a guy, Detective Matson?
Oh, cut it out.
No, seriously. Why do you want to check on the guy, Candy?
No reason. Just thought I'd ask.
Well, Martinello's okay. He's trying to make a living. Only thing I don't like, he loves to sing to his customers.
That'd be enough to bankrupt him right there.
Anything else I can do?
No, that takes care of everything.
I tell you what, I'm through in about an hour. I'll take you up to Martinello's for dinner. You can see for yourself.
No, that's all right.
Okay, Candy, give.
Why, Mallard, dear, what on earth do you mean?
You know something about something. I want in.
Mallard, and I want you to believe this. I mean it sincerely. If I knew something, you'd be the last to know about it.
He's got something there. Come, love, leave us a while.
I hate to do things like that to Mallard. He's been of great help to me in the past. More than once, he's saved my life. But on a deal like this, you have to play it close. After all, a girl has to make a living. For the first time in a long time, I was completely baffled as to where to start. Something had to be done about that cadaver in the icebox, but what? While I was beetling my eyebrows, Rembrandt invited me up to his place for tea. He lives on California Street, just down away from Old St. Mary's, and only a bail bond broker's reach from the Hall of Justice. So I accepted.
Do forgive the looks of the place, Candy, dear. I had a meeting with my philatelist group last night.
Philatelists?
The stamp collectors, dear.
Well, I know what they are, but I didn't think they could make such a mess.
You don't know philatelists. Sit down, though. Make yourself comfortable. I shan't be a moment.
That's all right.
Candy, dear, why the wrinkles?
I've got cause for wrinkles. This chap in the icebox, Rembrandt. There's something I didn't tell you. He was dressed in a devil's costume.
There, dear. Your tea will ready in just a minute. You'll feel better.
I know it sounds crazy, but it's true.
What are you going to do, Candy?
I don't know. I can't leave him in that refrigerator forever.
We'll get him out, dear. I hate to think of a corpse catching pneumonia. Oh, excuse me, Candy. Help yourself to the tea.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do? Rembrandt Watson Enterprises.
Quiet down.
Who? Oh, hello, Templeton. How are all your steamships? Oh, that's good. What? Could I use do what? To the opera? Of course I could. Righto, I'll pick them up at your office. Thank you, Templeton. Goodbye. Candy, dear, do you like the opera?
I can take it or leave it. Why?
It suddenly develops that I have two tickets tomorrow night for Tales of Hoffman.
Oh, Rembrandt, I don't think I
can. Come, Candy, it'll do you good. You've been working too hard. You need a little relaxation.
Tales of Hoffman, hmm? Okay. Who's the pal who gave them to you?
An old friend of mine, Templeton Woodruff. He runs a steamship to Java and other places Ezio Pinza sings about.
I finished the tea and left. Right then, the only opera I could think of was the one going on in an icebox at Martinello's. I've always tried to play straight with Ray Mallard, so I decided to tell Martinello my plan.
Miss Matson, I don't think it's such a good idea.
Good evening, Carlo. I want to talk to you.
That's what I mean. There's a gentleman here who...
So you've got a gentleman. That's fine. Three more and you've got a crowd. What I want to talk to you about is this.
You don't understand. The gentleman I'm talking about is from the police.
The police?
Yeah. Hello, Candy.
Mallard.
How about some scallopini?
Well, up jumped the... Hello, Mallard, dear.
I had an idea you'd like dinner here tonight. Do you know my boy, Carlo?
Yes, we met.
How do you do? The signorina wish something to eat?
No, thanks. I want to talk to you, though, Mallard.
Sure. Come on into my booth. We'll share some salami.
No, thanks. I want to see you downstairs.
I don't think the food's as good down there.
I agree, but it isn't the food. I'm talking about murder.
All right, that's the first portion of Candy Matson. I tell you, she's a no-nonsense detective. Just because she's a female doesn't mean she can't kick some butt.
Well, who would have thought that at all?
Right? I'm just saying, you know, all these detectives are hard-boiled tough guys. No, she's just as tough as any of the guys.
Absolutely.
The Devil in the Deep Freeze, the name of this episode, from September 30th, 1949. We'll get back to Natalie Masters as Candy Matson after these words. All right, Lisa Wolf, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good,
good
Carl.
To see
how
you.
Are you?
Oh, yeah. I remember disco dancing to this song way back
what's
in the day.
Name? What's
the
your
80s.
Name?
The I was 80s, doing yeah. the disco. I was in the disco thing in the 80s.
Yeah, you're still in the disco thing, kind of,
yeah.
right?
I was thinking today, The girl that I gave that Italian horn
to. Are
you
still talking about her?
I was trying to think of what her name is. I can't remember her name. That's actually probably a good thing that I blocked her out.
Was that like the last girl you ever dated?
No, it's not the last girl.
No, you had a couple in
the 80s. I've had a few since the 80s.
Just a few, huh?
Yeah. But it's actually kind of good because it scarred me a little because she never kissed me and I gave her an Italian horn and I never saw her again.
Right. You've mentioned that a few times.
And
it's obviously
she's out there with my horn somewhere. And I was thinking.
Did you want it back, Carl?
Yeah. I either wanted her to kiss me or I wanted my horn back. And I got neither.
You know what?
That's not the first time that I got nothing.
I know what I need
denied.
To. I know what I need to get you for Christmas.
Italian horn.
I just figured it out.
But it's kind of good, though. That happened, what, a long time ago?
In the
40
80s.
Years ago?
Yeah.
Or whatever
it's
it was.
It's time to move on.
But I don't remember her name.
That's
so that's kind of good.
Just time to, you know,
scarred me for
let
a little
bygones
while.
Be
but after
bygones.
40 years, I've kind of let it go.
You let it go, Carl.
Yeah, I'll probably let it go. You know what, Lisa?
What?
We had a lot of people sign up to freeradioclassics.com yesterday. Like well over 100 people signed up for it. Folks, if you didn't hear my message yesterday about this website, it's a new website that I put up for all of our listeners. It's a free service to you, and this is a way to thank you for listening to this show. You can get a free classic radio show every single week. I send you an email with a link, and in that link, you can download, collect a classic radio show every single week. And in the email I send you every Monday, it also has a picture of the star in that radio show. It has the date, the original broadcast date, the synopsis. It has the cast members, all kinds of fun stuff. It's for you. It's a free service, and it's for our listeners. Just go to freeradioclassics.com. That's freeradioclassics.com. Check it out. Sign up. Just put your name and your email address, and tomorrow you'll get an email from me every Monday, 52 weeks a year. Good?
Good. It's almost Monday.
All right. We're tuning in to Candy Matson. Let's listen to the conclusion now of The Devil in the Deep Freeze on Candy Matson Detective.
Once again, I headed down into the catacombs of the Charlemagne. This time, the act was a double. Mallard was right behind me. Then I looked around. We were a trio. Martinello was right behind Mallard. This is it.
This is what?
This is an icebox. Inside, you'll find a body dressed in a devil's costume.
Okay, Carlo, let's humor the lady. Open the thing, will you?
Yes. I'll open it.
Lovely view of the beef.
It's gone. The body's gone. Okay, Martinello, start talking and make some sense while you're doing it.
Please, Miss Matson, I don't know anything. I haven't been down here all day.
Get rid of those arched eyebrows, Martinello. You know something. What is it?
Wait a minute, Candy. I'll do the questioning. In the first place, Carlo, was there or was there not a body in here?
Sure there was. He can't deny it. Here's a check for $2,000 signed by Martinello himself.
Well, Carlo?
Yes. There was a body, all right.
Who was it? Friend of yours?
No, Inspector. I never saw him before.
Why did you call Miss Matson? Why didn't you come to see me about it?
Well, you know, Inspector, the police...
Just because you were once arrested for bootlegging, Carlo, is no reason to be afraid of the police. Well, I'll put a couple of my men on the job and see what we can turn up.
What? Is that all you're going to do, Mallard?
No. Right now, I'm going back upstairs and have some of Carlo's scallopini.
Mallard, are you out of your head?
Look, Candy, in order to have a murder case, you've got to have a body. Obviously, we're fresh out. And until your pal with the devil's costume turns up, I intend to live my typical everyday life. Don't forget the mushrooms, Carlo.
There are times when I get so mad at Mallard, I want to scream. I didn't, though. I only scrammed. I hung on to the 2,000, however. I felt I deserved it just for getting my curiosity aroused, and it was aroused plenty. Corpses don't get up and walk out of iceboxes by themselves. But after all, Mallard had a point. There was nothing to be done without a body. So I went home and waded into a stack of dirty dishes that had been piling up. Then I fixed dinner and started a new stack of dirty dishes. Got a book and ducked into bed. In the morning, I had an idea. After breakfast, I went down to the corner of Broadway and Columbus. That's where North Beach does a neat blend with Chinatown. On the corner was a Joe who sold newspapers. I'd known him for some time, and he seemed to like me. Hiya, Butch.
Well, hello there, lady. How are you?
Good. Can't complain. Who won the football game yesterday?
Yeah, funny thing. I got all the news right inside here for 7 cents.
I get your point. Give me a chronicle, will you?
Sure. Here.
Thanks. Who do you like in the feature, Bay Meadows?
A goat named Candy.
What did you say?
There's a pig named Candy running in the 7th. Take it or leave it.
What a tip.
I don't get it. Well, what's really on your mind, lady?
Here's a 20. You can play it on Candy all for yourself.
Well.
Do you know a gent named Martinello Butch? Mm. He owns the Charlemagne down the block.
Sure. What about him?
That's what I'm asking you. What about him?
Oh, he's all right. A little screwy, but he keeps his nose clean.
Is that all?
Yeah. Should there be more?
I don't know. Thanks, Butch. I hope Candy pays off. I was getting nowhere, that was for sure, and the rest of the day went the same way. Dead ends, blind alleys. I checked as many loose ends as I possibly could, but I was still stuck in a quandary. But the crusher claimed late in the afternoon when I got a copy of the late paper and read where Candy came in at Bay Meadows and paid $32.20. And I hadn't had sense enough to get aboard. When I got home, the phone was ringing. Hello, Candy Matson.
Oh, you're Candy Matson. I should play a fanfare.
Oh, hello, Rembrandt, dear. How are you?
Like an October morning. Every single one of me pores is breathing great, huge gulps of air.
What?
I just had a facial, Dove. Most invigorating.
What on earth for? I loved your old pores just the way they were.
Candy, you've forgotten.
I have? Forgotten what, Rembrandt?
We're going to the opera tonight.
Oh, Ducky, I'm sorry. I had forgotten. I'm afraid I'll have to renege.
Now, Candy, you promised, and I don't care what you're involved in. It'll do you good.
But, Rembrandt, I'm working on it. Perhaps you're right. Okay, I'll get ready.
Wonderful, dear. Pick me up about 7:45, will you?
Pick you up at 7:45. Yeah.
Oh, and another thing, Lamb. We may have to do some entertaining afterward. Do bring some cash, will you?
Mm-hmm.
That's the girl.
That Rembrandt, always stony broke. I guess photography isn't what it's cracked up to be. I didn't mind, though. He's been a friend to me on more than one occasion. Well, if I was going to the opera, I had to start thinking in operatic terms. I fished around in the closet and came up with something that would have done any woman's heart good. One of those strapless affairs that you can't stop breathing in for one moment, otherwise the opera is no longer the main attraction. I powdered perfume, pouted in rouge, and took off after Rembrandt. But just as I started to leave... Just a moment.
Well, get a load of the Duchess.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be Halloween for another couple of weeks yet.
Oh, very funny. Come on in, Millard.
What are you decked out for, Candy?
Something you wouldn't understand. I'm going to the opera.
Oh, I love the opera. Any horse opera with Tex Acuff in it.
That's what I thought. What's on your mind, Mallard? I've got to pick up Rembrandt in 10 minutes.
Well, I was just driving by, so I thought I'd stop and tell you the news.
News? About what?
We found El Diablo.
The guy in the icebox?
Yeah. Martinello identified him. He was floating in the water off Aquatic Park.
Any lead on him?
The best. He was Salavini, the second baritone with the opera company. That's all, Candy. I hope you enjoy the performance tonight.
A baritone with the opera company. Well, that explained the costume, but it didn't explain a lot of other things. I walked down the stairs with Mallard. He got in his squad car, flicked on the flashing red light, and with a burst of his siren, rolled down the street. I'd have to speak to Mallard about that. All the neighbors had their heads out of their windows as I climbed into my car and followed. What an exit. I picked up Rembrandt, and we drove up to the Civic Center. I found a place to park. A minor miracle. The last time I went to the opera, I had to drive almost to Palo Alto and come back by train. Rembrandt's friend must have been very influential. We had seats in the Diamond Horseshoe. They were presenting Tales of Hoffman, and a friend of mine, Dorothy Warrenchild, was singing the role of Antonia. It was a fine performance, and after the last curtain, I took Rembrandt, and we went backstage to see Dorothy. This is your dressing room, Rembrandt.
Yes?
Hello, Dorothy. This is Candy Matson. I have a friend with me.
Oh, do come in, please, Candy.
Candy, how are you?
Couldn't be better. Dorothy, may I present Mr. Watson? Rembrandt, this is Miss Warrenchild.
I'm delighted. You're in magnificent voice tonight, dear.
Thank you. Sit down, won't you? I've only a moment. We're rehearsing some of the scenes in Faust tonight.
Rehearsing after a full evening's performance?
It has to be done, Candy. Our baritone disappeared. We've had to replace him with a new man.
Yes, I know. By the way, Dorothy, I heard you on your Standard Hour broadcast a few weeks ago. It was a wonderful performance.
I'm glad you liked it, Candy. I always look forward to those.
What are your plans, Dorothy?
Well, the season closes here, and then we open in Los Angeles.
Oh, yes, of course.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Come in.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you had guests.
That's all right. Oh, Candy, I'd like to introduce Rolf Herberts. This is Miss Matson and Mr. Watson.
It's nice to meet you.
Mr. Herberts is our new baritone.
Oh, yes.
That's why we're rehearsing tonight.
I won't take any more of your time, Dorothy. I just thought we'd save a few moments of rehearsal if I told you that I don't move in that last scene. I sing upstage. That will leave you free to take as much stage as you like.
Fine, Rolf. That will save time. Thanks.
Oh, not at all. Glad to have met you, Miss Madsen, Mr. Watson.
Nice to have met you, sir.
Yeah, see you on stage, Rolf.
Yes, Rolf. Rolf has a wonderful voice, and he's a good actor, too. You know, I think he'll be even better than Salavini.
I've seen him before.
Oh, yes, he's been in pictures and on the concert stage, and in opera, too, but he's never really had a good break. This might be it. Uh-oh, that's it, Candy. I'm sorry, but I'll have to leave.
Certainly, Dorothy.
Say, why don't you stand in the wings? You can watch the rehearsal if you'd like.
Oh, I'd love it.
Come on, then. Follow me.
All right, the places, everyone. Places.
This is all right, Candy. You can stay right here.
Thanks, Dorothy.
Glad to have met you, Mr. Watson.
Also, as we used to say in the theater, go out there and kill them.
See you later.
Where's Miss Warrenshaw? Ah, there you are. Herberts, where's Herberts?
I saw him just a moment ago in the dressing room.
Well, it's late. We've got to keep moving. Please, somebody find Herberts. Ah!
From way up in the heights of the stage, the opera house was pierced with a blood-curdling scream. That was no ordinary scream. It was a scream of death. You wait here, Rembrandt. Keep your eyes open. I'm going up to have a look. That scream wasn't in the score of Faust. I punched the button for the backstage elevator. It's a good thing they work fast and are speedy. Once inside, I pressed the button for the fourth gallery. I got out. This was the top of the opera house. The place was loaded with old sets, props, papier-mâché alligators, gold goblets. Then, over on the other side of the catwalk, I saw it. The body of a man all crumpled and distorted. I hit the catwalk and ran over. It was 100 feet above the stage, and as I looked down, I could see a score of strained faces looking up through the darkness. I got on the other side and bent over the body. It was that of Rolf Herberts.
Candy, down here. I think your man just dropped down underneath the stage.
Again, I did a Mel Patton. The elevator shot me down to the stage level, and there was Rembrandt, wild-eyed.
He came down the elevator on the other side, Candy. Then he cut across the stage and down those steps.
Come on, Rembrandt, follow me. I may need help. We ran down the steps and into the bowels of the stage. It looked like a nightmare, a myriad of cross beams of steel for the rising stages. We cleared those and went around by the chorus dressing rooms. There was only one out. I remembered it. A door over in the corner, very seldom used, but it was open. It led into a long tunnel with giant steam pipes running overhead and to the right. This went underground over to the Veterans Building. Down by your feet, there's a stream of water flowing in a trough. It's the old Hayes Valley Creek. Our killer decidedly knew his opera house. As we entered the tunnel, I could see him up ahead running like crazy, so we took off after him. We made the other side, and it breaks into a big engine room. As we came into the opening, I looked around. The engineer was lying on the floor out like a light, blood spurting from his scalp. Then I glanced up. There was another door. This led into the Veterans Building itself and an avenue of escape onto Van Ness. I ran up. Then as we got into the long corridor, I saw Martinello breaking for the door. Stop! Stop, Martinello!
Stop! You think I am a fool?
I do if you don't stop.
Try and get me.
Okay, pal. You asked for it. It was the first time I had ever shot a man. It didn't feel good. But he lived, and later the doctors of law gave him a little pill, the cyanide kind they dropped inside the gas chamber at San Quentin. Martinello paid his debt. Details? Sure, I'll fill him in now. Martinello loved to sing. Ray Mallard had told me that. For years, Carlo had been hanging around the opera house hoping to step into a role. This season, a director had jokingly told him that if he ran out of baritones, he'd let Carlo take over. Carlo took him seriously. He lured Salovini down to his restaurant on a fake emergency call, costume and all, and did him in. But then he became frightened. That's when he called me. It was worth $2,000 to have me hush things up. But I don't operate like that. He had a hunch I was going to tip off Mallard. That's when he removed the body from the icebox and dumped him into the bay. Carlo had also been at the performance of Tales of Hoffman. That's when he learned that they'd rustled up Rolf Herberts to sing in place of Salovini. By this time, Martinello was obsessed with the idea of singing in the opera house and wouldn't stop at anything. Right after Herberts left Warren Schold's dressing room, he managed to get Herberts into the elevator and up to the fourth gallery behind the stage. That scream was produced by a 6-inch stiletto through Herbert's heart from the hands of Martinello. And that's when our chase began. I hope I never see that tunnel under the opera house again. That Mallard and his sentiment. It was he who gave me that gun just a week before, for my birthday. He said I needed protection. Well, darn it, I do. But I can't get Mallard to believe me. Instead, he just gives me guns.
Listen again at this same time next week. For excitement and adventure, just dial...
Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Heard tonight were Harry Bechtel as Rolf Herberts, Jerry Walter as Carlo Martinello. Henry Left plays the role of Inspector Mallard and Jack Thomas as Rembrandt. Dorothy Warren Schold, star of the Standard Hour and the San Francisco Opera Company, was heard as herself. The program stars Natalie Masters as Candy and is written and produced by Monty Masters. With the exception of Miss Warren Schold, any resemblance to actual people in tonight's play is purely coincidental. Candy Matson comes to you from San Francisco. This is Dudley Manlove speaking. You are tuned for the stars on NBC.
That is Candy Matson, September 30th, 1949. Devil in the Deep Freeze, starring Natalie Masters. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. I live this song. No girls call me.
I know. I call you.
Yeah, but you're
all
married.
All the time.
You're married.
Way too many times.
Yeah, but what do you call him?
Exactly.
Yeah, she calls
right?
me a lot of stuff.
Only off the air, though, Roger.
How's it going, Roger?
Doing great.
All right.
Loving the shows tonight.
Ah, you
love
like the
me
detectives.
A good detective show.
Did you sign up to freeradioclassics.com?
I haven't. I've been working here and sleeping,
okay.
And I haven't had time.
Write it down. Got your pen?
I remember. I got it written down. Hold on a second.
I got it right here.
He's showing us in the
Let
screen.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah, right
I
there,
see who signs up, so I'll know exactly when you sign up.
I know. He can't do Facebook or Twitter, but he can do this.
When you're sleeping and then you're awake,
I'm
and
like
if
Santa
you've been
Claus.
Bad or good.
But you know what, Roger? This site is like perfect for you. You
I
love
know.
Classic radio.
You better believe I do.
And you probably know how to Bluetooth it to your phone, and you can listen in your car.
I got a silver tooth with a filling in it.
Yeah.
What's this Bluetooth you speak of?
Lisa has green teeth.
Ooh. Right. It's candy. She must have been eating some candy.
It was the Twizzlers.
It was
Thanks, Elif
is in there eating Twizzlers, so her teeth are probably all red.
I have red teeth.
Yeah, I love Twizzlers. I'm a Twizzler. Remember we were talking about
candy?
Yeah, remember?
Not Candy Matson, but just
Roger,
candy.
Do you remember the conversation we had a few months ago about candy that is not around anymore.
Right, I remember that. Sure, yeah.
Like, that was.
And then we got into favorite candies.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. My favorite candy is
Chunky.
Chunky.
I remember.
Chunky.
And what's my favorite
ever
candy?
Ever want to make me happy, just bring me a Chunky, because I am Chunky.
What's my favorite candy?
I think, is it like,
you know.
Do you want to call a friend?
A mound?
He's phone a friend.
Almond mounds or something?
Ew, 50, coconut? 50.
No.
Aleph, help him.
It's Hershey's.
No.
No.
Ooh.
What's your favorite candy, Lisa?
It's a Junior Mints and peppermint patties.
Oh, the Junior Mints.
Oh, those are
I can
so
OD
good.
On those.
Me too.
Mounds are almost as bad as those anyway.
Ew, mounds.
Sometimes
you feel like a nut. Sometimes you don't.
And I love Raisinettes.
Oh.
But you notice when you go to the movies now, you get a big box of Raisinettes, and then you get this. It's a big box, and then you open it up, and there's plastic in there, and then the Raisinettes are like one-third of the plastic.
Yeah, sold by volume.
You believe that? You
sold
that?
By weight and
that's
not volume.
That's just not cool.
Blasphemous, you buy the, it is.
And it's a lot. It's like $6 for a box of Raisinettes.
You
$5.75.
Can afford it. You got plenty of money.
$5.75. You open up the thing, Roger. You're following me here?
Yeah, I understand. There's a plastic bag holding the Raisinettes inside the box.
Yeah, and it's like one-third of the plastic has the Raisinettes in it.
Right.
And then people are like, hey, could I have some of that? You know, like, because I take my kids with me.
What? You don't like to share, Carl?
And they're like, oh,
why
Dad,
why don't you buy them
me...
each their own box?
Please.
Are
unless
you
that would be too expensive.
That's expensive.
And a drink to boot.
Oh, and a drink?
I don't. I'll drink water. I won't drink that fountain stuff. Ugh.
I didn't
horrible.
Say it had to be that.
And they passed that law, you know. They passed the law for the
tax. They're going to have to raise the prices on
I mean, when
now.
You buy a six-pack of Coke now.
Mm-hmm.
That's and it's per ounce. It's not per can. It's per ounce.
1 penny
so
per ounce.
So it's like 50 cents more for a six-pack or whatever it is. This is not an inexpensive tax they put on Coca-Cola and stuff. I'm glad I don't drink any of that.
And it's not just soda.
No.
It's every drink that has regular sugar or artificial sugar.
So it's everything, really, other than water. What about iced tea?
You can get your
Pellegrino. If it's got sugar in it.
Yeah. What, Lisa?
You get your Pellegrino and we're all good. There's no sugar
in there. And then
they
talk about how they're going to use this for what? They're going to use this for the schools and things like that. Do you really believe that?
Well, they have to say what it's going to be, and they have to, by law, use it for what they say. It's in the law that was written and passed for the tax.
Yeah.
They have to. Now, if it's vague language, then it leaves them leeway to use it any way they wish.
I don't believe it. You know what I believe in?
What do you believe?
Classic radio
shows. Oh, my gosh. What a...
What's a segue?
That's what I believe in. And we have a classic radio show coming your way in a minute. But all of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor will star in the upcoming reboot of The Invisible Man, based on H.G. Wells' science fiction novel, The Invisible Man, published in 1897.
Really?
Yes.
New Invisible Man movie. Wow.
Exciting. And the winner gets a Christmas package, including a Lightkeeper Pro, the most coveted holiday gift of the season.
And then the Scentkeeper Pro
for a real Christmas tree scent on your artificial tree, or if you would like to smell like Carl.
Yeah, I use it for deodorant. It's great. Okay, so 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Ed Wood.
Yes, I'm Ed Wood. I'm here about directing the Christine Jorgensen picture.
this is one of the greatest movies ever made. You know that, Lisa?
I do know that.
Ed Wood. All right, 312-981-7200. Give us a call. Tell us who that actor is. Win a Lightkeeper Pro and a Scentkeeper Pro. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop, and we'll play it again.
Yes, I'm Ed Wood. I'm here about directing the Christine Jorgensen picture.
And we've got Salvador on the line from Chicago. Hey, Salvador.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Great. Well, we're hoping to give you a Christmas package if you can tell us who that actor is.
It is Johnny Depp from Pirates of the Caribbean as well.
That is right. The Johnny Depp. The Johnny Depp. You are a winner. Yeah. You've won the Christmas package, including a Lightkeeper Pro, your complete tool for repairing holiday light sets, and a Scent Keeper. Carl calls it the Scent Keeper Pro. I'm going to go with that for a real Christmas tree scent on your artificial tree.
Your armpits.
Or your, yes. Okay.
Oh, great.
Great. You can use it wherever you'd like. You can visit LightkeeperPro.com.
Brad's brother uses it. You know, arm.
Yes.
Armpit. Brad's brother.
Okie dokie.
Beautiful. I like that.
Yeah. Well, you're the only one who likes it. There we go.
Savada,
thanks so much for calling in, and thanks for listening to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay, buddy. Have a great night. All right, yours truly, Johnny Dollar, one of the best detective shows of the golden age of radio, ran from 1949 all the way, Lisa, to 1962. There was a lot of actors that played Johnny Dollar on the air, but none better than Bob Bailey, and that's who stars in this particular episode. It's called The Virtuous Mobster Matter. Let's go back to June 22nd, 1958. Here's part one of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
From Hollywood, it's time now for... Johnny Dollar.
Hi there, Johnny. This is your old pal, Lefty.
Lefty?
Well, sure. You remember Lefty Stimper.
Huh?
You know, down here in Virtue.
Virtue?
V-I-R-G-U, Virtue, South Carolina.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. You remember? Me and the boys, we occupied this Caraway plantation down here on the Petey River.
Well, sure, of course. Listen, are you having trouble again with old man Caraway?
Oh, no, sir, not a bit. And you know how we stopped him, me and the boys, from making trouble for us?
How, Lefty?
We bought him out, that's all. Yeah, we give him 100 G's for the place, cash money. Now we own a whole entire plantation.
Well, good for you. But now, what's your problem?
Well, Johnny, we fixed this place up real nice since you've seen it. You know, we spent a lot of dough on it.
So?
So we want to buy a lot of new insurance on it.
Oh, well, then hop on over to Georgetown and see your old friend Joe Picatello about it.
Old friend, huh?
After all, he's your insurance agent.
Yeah, is he?
Well, sure, of course he is. Didn't he sell you all the other insurance you... Lefty, has something happened to Joe?
Yeah, only I don't know what it is.
What do you mean?
Well, that's just it. I don't know. I talked to him on the phone, asked him to come out here. He says, okay. But he don't come.
You think somebody's knocked him off?
Then I call him again. He says, okay again. He'll be right over. But he still don't come.
Well, have you gone over to Georgetown to see him, to see what's the matter?
5, 6, maybe even half a dozen times. But every time he ain't there.
Lefty, I don't get it.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. There's something wrong about it, Johnny. And if I were you, I'd come down here and find out.
You know something? I think you're right.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
And now, Act One of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Continental Insurance Company Home Office, New York, New York. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Virtuous Mobster matter. Expense account item 1, $7.85, train to New York City and taxi to the office of Continental Insurance Company. Fortunately, my contact there, Ben Orloff, was in.
Come in, Mr. Dollar, come in.
Thanks. How are you?
Sit down.
Thanks. Now, Mr. Orloff.
Wait a minute. Don't tell me you never received that check for your services down in South Carolina.
Oh, yes, I got that.
Why, I had that mail out to you nearly 2 months ago.
Yes, I said I got it.
Good. Incidentally, I thoroughly enjoyed your report on that case. The Village of Virtue matter, you called it?
Yes.
So why a group of ex-gangsters should decide to settle in a town called Virtue, I'll never understand.
Well,
were they really behaving themselves, as your report indicated, or had they been using that old plantation for a sort of hideout?
Their records have been clean down there for over 20 years now.
Is that so? Well, maybe the answer to organized crime is to give all those fellows a nice, quiet plantation to live on.
Yes.
Though I must say that when our agent down there, Joseph Picatello...
It's about Joe that I've come to talk
to. I must say that I was a bit concerned when I found Joe had sold policies to characters like Lefty Stemper and Bully Magoon and Flippy Lacker.
Mr. Orloff.
Why, those were the very sort of men that Thomas E. Dewey chased out of New York when he was DA some years ago.
Mr. Orloff.
That was before Dewey became governor, you know. So naturally, what were you going to say about Joe Picatello?
Have you heard from Joe recently?
No, I don't think I have, now that you mention it.
Because I just talked over the phone.
Wait. You must understand one thing, Mr. Dollar.
What's that?
Our office down there in Georgetown is probably the smallest one we have in the whole country. Joe really doesn't handle much business for us, you know.
Yes, I understand. I understood that when I talked to him in April.
If it weren't for those mobsters over in Virtue...
Ex-mobsters, Mr. Orloff.
Well, if it wasn't for them and some of the townspeople to whom we've issued policies, I'd... Mr. Dollar... Has something happened to Joe Picatello?
That's what I want to find out.
Because now that I think about it... Excuse me. Miss Bailey?
Yes, Mr. Orloff?
Did you ever get a reply on the Harmon policy from Mr. Picatello in our Georgetown office?
No, sir. I've written Mr. Picatello several times now.
Thank you. Dollar, we wrote Joe about that Harmon matter over 4 weeks ago.
Well, didn't it occur to you to phone him and find out why he hasn't answered you?
But it involves such a small policy that... Yes. Perhaps I'd better try to call him. Miss Bailey?
Wait.
Yes?
Nothing.
What?
I said nothing. Well, Mr. Dollar?
Well, Mr. Orloff, if something has happened to Joe Picatello... Well, look, instead of spreading the alarm, how about if I quietly run on down there?
But have you reason to believe something wrong has happened to him?
Only from what his clients down there at the plantation have told me over the phone.
You think perhaps some of his old gangland enemies have got to him?
After 20 years, I don't know. But if you'll okay my expense account, I'll go down there and see.
Well, now, Mr. Dollar...
And if you won't, I'll go down there anyway.
But there's the danger, too. This might be a very dangerous... Let me hear from you as soon as you can, Mr. Dollar.
Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment.
And now for another episode in the life of Sergeant Donald Bellwether, my husband. Oh, Donald, it's sure pouring, isn't it? Can you see all right?
Oh, yeah, I can see. Windshield wipers are operating with mechanical perfection. You notice there are no more streaks either since I put on the new rubber blade.
You know, I think every driver should have his windshield wipers in good order. It's much safer. It would be much safer if everyone would slow down during wet weather like my husband is doing right now.
Just being cautious, Reba. We don't want an accident in this downpour.
We don't want an accident anytime.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, the experts say that accidents just don't happen. Something causes accidents, and that cause can be prevented. By the way, dear, in what kind of weather do you think most accidents occur?
Oh, I'd say in rain or snowy weather or slippery weather when visibility is impaired.
That's the wrong answer, dear.
Wrong? Are you serious?
Statistics show that 8 out of 10 accidents occur when the weather is clear or with a cloudy overcast.
Hmm. Are you positive? I wonder why.
But, oh, here's our house here.
Oh, yeah. You sit right here, Reba. I'll get out with the umbrella, and then I'll come around and open your door.
All right, honey.
I wonder why.
Wonder why what?
Why 8 out of 10 accidents happen in clear weather?
Oh, well, I don't know for sure, Sergeant. But I do know that you drove very carefully tonight in the rain.
Thank you.
Now, if everyone drove as carefully during clear, dry weather, there'd be less accidents, I'm sure.
Hey, that must be it. People automatically get cautious in the rain and snow. Too bad they don't stay that way in good weather.
You will, won't you? I mean, drive safely in good weather, too?
I promise.
Oh, that's my Donald. That's my doll.
All right, that's the first portion of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, with a virtuous mobster matter. We'll get back to it in a few minutes. But first, these words here on the WGN Radio Theater. There's some disco. Danced to this song quite a few times over at Stay Out Discotheque. Yeah, I think that was like a sort of a, you know, what do you call that?
Do you think we ever crossed paths, Carl, in our, like, earlier before we actually met about 10
Let's
years
think
ago?
About that.
We could have.
Did you ever go to Stay Out Discotheque?
I never heard of that one. I went to the Snuggery. Remember?
I went to the Snuggery.
See what I'm saying?
I went to the Snuggery.
Think we could have
Did
just...
you go to Halakahiki ever?
Hui Wadi?
And River Grove, Halakahiki. I went there a few times.
That's not in my little distance area.
Yeah, but Snuggery, yeah. I went to the Snuggery.
In Deerfield?
Yeah. I'm sure I did.
Yeah, I was there.
It was a long time ago. It's hard for me to remember what
I had
for breakfast
you know,
this morning,
how
let alone.
You cross paths and then later on you...
It's like Sliding Doors. Remember that movie?
Yes, exactly.
It's like that.
Every decision you make alters
Gwyneth
the next
Paltrow.
One. I like that. I like the concept.
Me too. You know what I like?
Classic radio.
I do.
And you like free classic radio.
Yeah, if you want free classic radio, we do that for you via this free
radio
classics.com. Make sure you sign up for it, folks, and you'll get a classic radio show from me every single Monday. I'll send you an email with a link to a classic radio show, plus historical information on that show, pictures, cast members, sponsor, all that good stuff. I send you 52 emails a year.
Do you think I could get an email from you every week? Because
sure.
It would make me feel special.
Sign up.
I'd
Just
feel
go
very
to
special.
FreeRadioClassics.com. Put your first name, last name, and email address. And you'll be signed up. And if you don't want to get them after a while, just unsubscribe. No problem. But we'll send you an email every single week.
Every week I could get an email from you.
Literally, if you were to just sign up one time, that's all you got to do. Every year you could collect 52 shows from me. And if you did it for 2 years, that would be 104. 3 years would be 156.
That's good. That's good.
Hey.
That's good.
Not bad. Math was, I had a crush on my math teacher. That's why I did well in math. All right, we're listening to yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Let's go back to June 22nd, 1958 for the conclusion to the virtuous mobster matter on yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the virtuous mobster matter. Expense account item two, $28 even, transportation and incidentals, New York City to Georgetown, South Carolina. It was late when I pulled into the prosperous little southern community. It was dark, pitch dark. Item three, $50 deposit on a rental car. Item four, 70 cents for a sandwich and a Coke at an all-night diner. Then I drove over to Joe Picatello's on a side street near the park. The small frame building that served as both office and living quarters for Joe was dark. But in the hope he might be asleep in his little apartment up above, I knocked. No answer. Until I was about to turn and go back to my car, it was the sound of a door slamming somewhere inside. But still no light showed. I knocked again. Then, faintly, I heard footsteps approaching. But why hadn't Joe turned on a light in there?
Yeah? What do you want?
Joe.
Yeah?
Joe, open up. It's Johnny Dollar.
Johnny who?
Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator. You know.
Investigator? That's what you said?
Are you kidding? What's the matter with you, pal? Open up.
Yeah. Sure.
Hiya, Joe. What's the idea? No lights in here. You forget to pay your bill or something?
Maybe. What do you want?
What?
Investigate, you said, Willie. Did you hear that?
Willie?
Yeah, I heard.
Hey, what is this?
Don't move.
Huh? Well, oh, no, you don't.
All right, Willie, I got his gun. I hit him again.
Yeah.
Again. Once more.
Okay. There he is, out like a light.
Yeah.
Well, what do you want I should do with him now?
Huh? You crazy, Willie? You mean you don't...
Okay, but... If I blast him here, it's going to make a lot of noise, and if anybody...
Listen.
Hey, it's a car coming down the street.
Investigator, you said. so he wouldn't be working alone. Come on, out the back way.
But I know who's going to take care of
you. Get out of here.
I don't see no lights on, Lefty.
Well, maybe Joe's went to bed, if he's there.
He didn't answer the phone when you called him.
Listen, Flippy, Johnny Dollar told me I should come down here and look for Joe myself. So come on, we'll see.
Oh, well, whatever you say, Lefty. Only I thought that Johnny was coming down here himself.
Hey, look, this door's open.
Yeah, you look what I stepped on.
Joe, what happened to you?
That ain't Joe. It's Johnny Dollar.
Johnny Dollar. Hey, you're right, Flippy. Somebody must... Listen, get away. Oh, Johnny, it's me. It's me, Lefty.
Lefty?
Me, Flippy.
Johnny, okay? You all right?
Yeah, I...
Oh, holy...
Who done this to you, Johnny?
Yeah, we'll murderize him. Hey, Flippy, turn on some lights.
Yeah, sure. What happened in here?
You know who done this to you, Johnny?
Yeah? It was... Oh,
hey, come here, Flippy. Help me lay him up on the sofa.
Sure,
Lefty. Easy. Yeah.
Here now.
Yeah. I know. Johnny, listen to me. Who, Johnny? Who?
Yeah, Johnny.
I can't believe it, but I could see him in the light from the street.
Who?
Joe.
What?
Joe Pigatello.
Smokey Pigatello done this to you?
Another guy with him. Call him Willie.
Willie the Lump?
Why? Why did he do it?
I don't know. I could... Very strange when he came to the door.
But I don't get it. He was my pal. He was your pal.
And, well, Willie, the lump with him. That's what I don't get.
It means he's went back. That's what it means. He's went back to the old racket, dope smuggling.
No.
Yeah, him and Willie the Lump was partners in the old days.
But 20 years, Joe's been straight, Lefty. Like you and me and Bully Magoon.
Yeah, for 20 years, you and me and Bully, the only guns we ever used was for hunting, for killing snakes. But not no more.
What do you mean, Lefty?
Joe Pigatello done this to you, Johnny. Means only one thing. There's only one thing we can do.
No.
He's right, Johnny.
No, Lefty.
Yeah, Johnny. First we take you back to the plantation where you get all right again.
No, listen to me.
Then we find Joe Pigatello. Flip and Bully and me.
No.
And we do.
Huh? Well, now, what are you punks doing here, huh?
Joe.
That's right. Who'd you expect? And what's the big idea?
All right, don't move. Because, Joe, I'm gonna blast your head off.
Act three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment.
Do you know who said, every individual in society has certain powers, rights, and privileges which no other individual can justly abridge or destroy? Those words were written by Noah Webster, the man who compiled America's first great dictionary. Mr. Webster knew that if the country which he had seen come into being were to succeed, the rights of the individual have to be protected. Each person is entitled to certain basic rights, powers, and privileges, which must not be taken away because of the whim of someone with greater power. In the United States, the individual is important regardless of his wealth, power, or position. The importance of the individual is closely linked to the American tradition. Remember the words of Noah Webster. They are part of your American heritage. The rights and privileges of the individual must be preserved.
And now, Act Three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Virtuous Mobster Matter.
Say the atmosphere was tense there in Joe Pigatello's office in Georgetown, South Carolina would be the understatement of the week. After the beating I'd taken from the ex-gangster and one of his pals, my old friends Lefty and Flippy had come in and found me there. And they couldn't understand why Joe had done this to me. Unless...
It means he's went back. That's what it means. Went back to the rackets.
Oh, Willie, the lump was with him.
Him and Willie was partners in the old days. Dope nuts.
So the two of them swore to get Joe. And then suddenly we looked up to see someone standing in the doorway.
Joe.
It was Joe Picatello.
That's right. Now, who'd you expect to win?
All right, don't move. Because, Joe, I'm going to blast your head off.
Oh, now put that thing down, Lefty.
Don't move.
What is this, Lefty, a gag or something?
Is it a gag what you done to Johnny Dollar?
Huh? Johnny.
I said one move and I'll give it to you.
Johnny.
Turn around, Joe, or I'll shoot you in the back, you dirty...
What did they do to you, Johnny?
Listen, Joe.
Lefty, Flippy, I'll kill you for this.
What are you talking about, you dirty rat?
Wait, Lefty.
Johnny's my pal, like you used to be before you went back in the racket.
Went back in the racket?
Yeah, with that dope hound, Willie the Lump.
What do you know about Willie the Lump?
Plenty. Now that you're back with him.
You're crazy.
It's no good, Joe, because Johnny recognized you. You and Willie the Lump when you wiped them over.
Can I tell you that I had...
20 years, you and Bully and Flippy and me, we showed we could do it straight. We could be respectable. Me and the boys at the plantation, you down here. But now you spoiled it. You ruined it for all of us.
Look, will you listen?
So don't move.
We made a deal, you and me and the boys. 20 years ago, if anybody slips, anybody breaks up our respectable life, he gotta go. Was that the deal?
Yeah, that was the deal. But you don't know what you're talking about when you say I'm going back.
All right, so you lousy scum, you not only go back, you do this to Johnny Dollar, my friend, the guy who believed in us.
Lefty.
So for that, you gotta go.
Lefty, listen.
Now, Joe. Right.
Lefty. Give me a gun, Lefty.
No, Johnny. That was the deal.
You ever use a gun on a man, you'll go up for the rest of your life.
Johnny, it's for you. I'm killing him.
Hand it over, Lefty. Okay, thanks. You see, it wasn't Joe who worked me over.
What?
I thought it was. It did look like him. It sounded like
him. Then it was him.
Look at his hands, his face, his clothes. Is this the man I fought with in here 5 minutes ago? Sure, maybe I did get the worst of it with two of them on top of me. But believe me, I cut them up some, too.
He's right, Lefty.
Yeah. But then I don't... Look, if it wasn't him... The twin.
You're right, Lefty. It must be the twin.
The twin here?
All right, boys, let me in on it, too, will you?
Shep Locke, or the twin, they called him. That's what the law called him. Called him and Joe, the twins, because they looked like each other. They talked like each other. There was always the alibi for each other.
But what's Shep Locke doing here?
I can't tell you, Flippy, not yet.
All right, Joe, all right. I believe you about not working over Johnny here because of what he says about, well, about you and me, it must up. But if you and Shep are back in the racket...
I'm not, Lefty. That's straight.
No? All right, then tell me. Where you been?
I can't tell you.
3-4 weeks now, we don't know where you are. The insurance company don't know where you are. Well?
I can't tell you. Now listen.
You listen.
You listen. If Shep and Willie have been here, they'll be coming back.
Why?
Yeah, Joe, why?
I can't tell you. I can't tell you. All right. Listen.
We're listening, Joe.
The Secret Service.
Huh?
Well, after those killings up in Baltimore.
During that smuggling job?
Yeah, Johnny. They knew the twins, Shep Locke and Willie. Well, the boys in Washington knew they did it. But they didn't know where to find them.
Well, go on, Joe.
So they sped the way. The Secret Service sped the way. That I knew where Shep and Willie were. That I would lead them to them.
You knew where they was, huh?
No, but the law boys knew that'd flush them out. Get Shep and Willie out looking for me, gunning for me.
And the Secret Service didn't keep you undercover?
Yeah, until today, back in Washington.
But I talked to you on your phone right here.
Oh, the line was rigged through to Washington.
You said, until today, Joe.
Yeah, because Shep and Willie didn't show. The law boys had to make them show.
So then they sent you here as living bait?
Yeah.
And they passed the word that you'd be here?
That's it, Johnny. That's why Shep and Willie were waiting here when you came. That's why they'll come back now that I'm here.
Boy, if you stuck your neck out for the sake of going straight.
I couldn't help myself. The Secret Service rigged it on me. Guy named Phillips. But now you're all in it. So, Flippy, turn out the lights.
Yeah, let's get out of here. Oh, no.
What?
Oh, listen, we was crooks, but never killers. But it's killers that's coming to get Joe.
What do you mean, Lefty?
But they won't. And they won't get you, Johnny.
Sorry, Lefty, I can't move.
But then we're staying. For you and Joe.
Yeah, right.
So turn out the lights, Flippy.
You're too late, boy.
Shep.
The twin.
That's right. Your old pal, Shep Locke. Keep a rat on him, Willie.
Don't worry, Shep.
Investigator, huh, Dollar? Only in Secret Service, ain't it?
Is it?
I knew we should have killed you when we had you, Dollar. But we thought these boys driving up was reinforcements. Reinforcements. We should have known the Secret Service wasn't that bright. All right, Willie, frisk him while I keep this gun on him.
Sure. No, none of you trying to...
Not Dollar, we got his gun.
Oh, okay. Just what do you intend doing, Shep?
They're clean, Shep.
What do you think? All right, Joe gets it first. Put your gun up close so it don't make no noise. Go ahead, Willie.
Yeah.
Oh, you got them both. And I thought you couldn't move.
Yeah, but boy.
Thanks, Johnny. Thanks.
Thank Lefty for giving me his gun when I asked for it, Joe. Oh, hey, look. Any of you guys know a good doctor? Yeah, I've said it before and I say it again. In this insurance business, you never know what you'll run into. Expense account total, including a flock of medical expenses and the trip back to Hartford, $174 even. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote today's story. Heard in our cast were Gene Tatum, Jack Crucian, Les Tremaine, Billy Hallep, Frank Gerstle, and Gil Stratton, Jr. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
And that's Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, from June 22nd, 1958. That's called The Virtuous Mobster Matters, starring Bob Bailey. And you heard the cast that they mentioned there, Les Tremaine, which brought me back years ago, Lisa. I was on this radio station as a guest on Eddie Schwartz's radio show. Eddie Schwartz was the king of late night radio in Chicago, and he had a long time program on WGN. And he one time had me in the studio with Les Tremaine. And Les Tremaine did a lot of radio shows, and I was presenting a tribute to Les Tremaine. I played, you know, a suspense episode with him and a Thin Man episode with him and a Falcon episode. And I didn't know about this show, but here he was in this program. But it was great to sit there with this icon, you know, from the golden age of radio.
Did you realize at the time that he was an icon?
Oh, yeah, because yeah. I was into classic radio. You know, I was
you knew what
brought
you were.
Shows yeah. from my library to play on the air. I did that maybe 4 or 5 times a year with Eddie Schwartz for years. And I used to do that show and dream about someday having my own program on WGN. And when you dream and you pray and you wish upon a star, sometimes things like that
sometimes
happen.
The pieces fall into place.
Exactly. All right, let's take a break here on the WGN Radio Theater. Much more coming your way. Oh, yeah. This will get your blood pumping right here. A little disco.
It's Blondie.
Yeah.
No?
Yes, Blondie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I used to love Blondie.
Yeah? You like Blondie?
Yeah. My favorite song by Blondie is Call Me. Yeah, it's
Call
my favorite
me.
Blondie. But this is a good one, too. She had some good ones. She's still out there rocking and rolling,
yeah.
man. You can't keep
Did
a good woman
man?
Down. Can't keep a good woman down. She's great, Blondie.
You know her?
No. never had the pleasure.
You were talking like you were good
friends.
I date
her, though. I mean,
would you?
Sure, why not? It's 7 minutes after 1 o'clock in the morning. She could sing to me. Right? She could sing me.
You asked me to sing to you, but I declined respectfully.
Yeah. You're a very good singer, Lisa.
Thanks, Carl.
She plays the piano, and Elif sings and plays the piano, too. Yeah. I have no musical talent or abilities whatsoever. Zero. I mean, zero.
Oh, I know.
I can't even sing in the shower.
That I don't know.
The water stops if I start to sing. It just stops coming out of the faucet.
I've tried to cover my ears, but I have earphones on.
All right. So this hour, my favorite detective, Boston Blackie. He was a smart aleck. I think that's why I like him, because he was like, the cool thing about Boston Blackie was he was pretty well to do. I mean, he must have did pretty well for himself because he never worked. That was the first thing. And he really wasn't a detective. He was sort of just this guy who helped people. And of course, it was always solving crime. But he used to be a jewel thief. He was a safe cracker and a jewel thief. So he was a bad guy. He went to jail, and then he got rehabilitated in jail. And while he was in jail, he decided, you know what, I'm going to use all my knowledge of the underworld to fight crime. So he had a girlfriend. Her name was Mary Wesley. I don't think she took his Italian horn from him.
He's still working on that.
She was his girlfriend. She was a nurse, and they just lived in New York, and he helped solve crime. And then there was always Inspector Faraday, who wanted to arrest him again. But then they kind of became friends throughout the series. But in the early run of the series, he was always trying to catch Boston Blackie doing something wrong. So I think you'll like it. It's coming your way in a few minutes. All brought to you in part by Cat's Pride. Dum, 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 dum,
dum, dum, dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars as Cruella de Vil in Cruella, the Walt Disney Pictures live-action reimagining of the iconic villain from 101 Dalmatians.
What do they win?
They will win a Christmas package, including a Lightkeeper Pro, your complete tool for repairing holiday light sets, and a Scent Keeper for real Christmas tree scent on your artificial tree.
wherever else you want to spray.
That's right.
All right, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She played Michael Keaton's character's daughter in Birdman.
You had a career, Dad, before the third comic book movie, before people started to forget who was inside that bird costume.
This girl's so cute.
Yeah, I was going to say, and another clue is Carl would date her.
Absolutely.
There's your clue.
Oh, without a doubt. 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
We're back. We're playing Celebrity Scoop, and we're going to play that movie clip again.
You had a career, Dad, before the third comic book movie, before people started to forget who was inside that bird costume.
And we're going to talk to Pat. Hey, Pat.
How
are you?
Lisa?
Good. Good to hear from you. And we're wondering, do you recognize that voice that Carl is drooling over here?
Of course. That's Emma Stone.
Emma Stone is right, Pat. And you have won the Christmas package, including the Lightkeeper Pro, your complete tool for repairing holiday light sets.
She's a stone cold fox, that Emma Stone.
Is that? Are you still back at Emma? And the Scent Keeper Pro, Carl loves it. It's for real Christmas tree scent on your artificial tree. But Carl prefers to smell like a tree, which is fine. It's better than nothing. So you can visit LightkeeperPro.com.
It's either that or High Karate, one of the two.
Okay, the tree's better. Okay.
It's definitely better. I think it's getting late. But thank you so much for calling in, Pat.
Thanks, Pat.
Take care. Good to hear from you.
Have a great night. Merry Christmas to
you.
Coming up, you know, Christmas is right around the corner. We have a ton of Christmas programming that we're going to air every single weekend here on the WGN Radio Theater. We have Christmas programming. Yeah?
What?
Yeah. All right, time for Boston Blackie. Let's tune this in. Broadcast date of June 18th, 1946. Dick Calmar stars as Boston Blackie. This is called The Hooded Gang, part one of Boston Blackie.
All right, men, I'll tell you why we're meeting here. Quiet.
Quiet.
And why we're all wearing masks.
I think we know, boss.
Yes? Perhaps you do, number one. You're wearing masks and are known to each other by number only because each one of you is wanted by the police for murder. You're all professional killers with a great deal of experience in the trade. and all the best in the business.
We hired to do some killing now, boss.
No, number eight, I hope killing won't be necessary. But if it is, well, I know all of you can be counted on for a good performance. The masks and the numbers will be worn only at these meetings, because none of you know the identity of the others. And I think it wise that it remain that way.
Afraid we'll rat on each other, boss?
Men of this profession have been known to inform on their associates before. The masks and number preclude all temptation of that here. You're strangers to each other. Even though we will now all work together, you shall remain strangers.
You say we're going to work together. What's the racket?
I'll come to that in a moment. I first want to make clear just one more thing. You have not been hired by me to kill, but I hired you because you are killers. We want our clients to pay us for our services. We much prefer that. But in the event a client does not want to do business with us, well, you know what to do. Any questions?
Why do we have to kill a guy who won't pay?
Are there any other questions?
Good morning.
Hi. You Ernie Howard?
Yes.
Nice little candy shop you got here.
I like it.
That's good. Guess you'd like it to stay nice, wouldn't you?
Why, yes, I... Stay nice? What do you mean?
Look, I want $5,000 from you, or this candy shop ain't gonna be so sweet.
I don't understand.
$5,000. Understand that?
Yes.
I want it. Understand that?
Yes, but why do I have to... Oh, I think I understand everything now. Get out. Get out or I'll call the police.
Now what good would that do you? I haven't done anything. Yet. But I am going to do something if I don't have that 5,000 bucks by this time tomorrow morning.
You can't threaten me.
This has nothing to do with you, pal. It's your wife. We'll kill her.
My wife?
Yeah. Not you. Your wife. Nice little twist, isn't it, huh? Now, let me tell you something. In case you figure on having a cop see when I come to see you tomorrow, sure, the cops will get me, but that won't save your wife.
Why not?
Because there's six other guys in this with me. Six other guys who'll go after your wife if anything happens to me, see? And don't think the cops will make me rat on them, because I can't. See, I don't even know who these other guys are or what they look like.
You're lying.
You have a cop here tomorrow morning when I come back to see you, and you'll find out. So, Mac, unless you're tired of your wife, don't go to the cops. Go to the bank.
After he left, I was afraid to go to the police, Blackie, but I thought it was all right to come to you.
It was a good idea to come to me, Howard. What time do you have to give this man the $5,000?
Tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock.
All right. Give him the money.
But I don't have $5,000.
You don't? Well, I do. I'll give it to you.
Oh, thank you, Blackie. I'll pay you back every penny of it.
Oh, no, you won't. I'm not giving it to you. I'm just letting you have it to give to this man. If you'll cooperate with me, it may turn out to be the best $5,000 I ever invested.
I'll do anything you say, of course.
Good. All you have to do is to let me hide in the back of your store tomorrow when this man comes to see you. I want to get a look at him. He said he was a member of a gang.
Yes, but he doesn't know the others, and if you hide in my store, there'll be trouble.
Sure there will. Plenty of it. I'm starting a personal gang war. Me against that character and his pals.
Inspector Faraday,
I'm Mrs. Ernie Howard.
Well, sit down, Mrs. Howard.
Oh, thank you.
Now, what can I do for you?
You can do a lot, Inspector. This morning, a man came to my husband's candy shop and ordered him to pay him $5,000 or I would be killed.
What?
Yes, Inspector. That's exactly what the man said. My husband doesn't know it, but I was in the back of the store at the time, and I heard everything.
Well, I'm glad you did hear everything, Mrs. Howard. This guy probably told your husband not to go to the police, and so he's not coming to us, is he?
No, he isn't. And I don't know where he's going to get the $5,000. We don't have that much.
You don't need that much, Mrs. Howard. In fact, you don't need a cent. All you need is protection, and you've come to the right place for it. I'll see that you're safe and comfortable when I go to your husband's store tomorrow morning to make somebody else mighty uneasy.
Well, it's 10 minutes to 10, Howard.
No, Blackie, it's 5 minutes to 10.
That guy should show any minute now. Where can I hide and still see everything?
In the back room, Blackie. There's just a curtain for the door.
Good. Where's your wife?
Oh, Blackie, I suppose I should have phoned and told you about it. When I got back from seeing you yesterday, I received a phone call from a wife. She's at her sister's in the country.
Well, that's a good place for her right now, especially. Uh-oh. Look who's here. Inspector Faraday.
Blackie, what are you doing here?
Minding my own business, Faraday. So why don't you get out of here and mind yours?
Because my business happens to be right here. You, Ernie Howard?
Yes?
Your wife came to me yesterday afternoon with a story about an extortionist demanding $5,000 from her husband, or she'd be killed.
She came to you, but I thought...
Everything you thought is what I told her to make you think. I didn't want you to get excited and think the cops were going to interfere and endanger your wife's life. Now, we're going to... Say, it's 10 o'clock now.
Yes, you'd better get out of here, Faraday.
Don't give me orders, Blackie. It's 10 o'clock, and you're here. Why?
Why? Because I have...
Wait a minute. I think I know why... Don't move, Blackie.
Oh, Faraday, put away that gun. You know guns make you nervous.
Yeah, and shakedown guys make me sore. Keep your hands up. Have you already paid him, Howard? Or was he just trying to collect when I walked in?
Pay him? Inspector Faraday, you're...
Yeah, I know. I'm wasting time. So I'll search him and find out for myself. I don't blame you for alibying him. You're probably scared stiff.
Faraday, sometimes, like now, you do the dumbest things.
Hold still. Well, look what I just got out of your pocket. A nice fat roll of $100 bills. And just about fat enough to be $5,000.
And that head of yours is just about fat enough to keep me from getting any sense into it, isn't it? Listen, Faraday, there isn't time to explain. It's 2 minutes after 10, and that shakedown guy is going to be here any minute.
He's already here, Blackie. He's you. And he's leaving right now.
Oh,
with me.
Please, Inspector Faraday,
Don't worry about your wife, Howard. She's safe. And once this guy's in jail, she'll stay safe. Come on, Blackie.
All right. But let me get my briefcase off this counter.
Since when did you carry a briefcase?
I don't. It belongs to Howard here. But right now, it belongs on your hand.
Hey, cut the gun out of it. Like that.
Sorry. I've got to shut you up, Faraday.
Hey,
with my best pocket handkerchief. Hold that cord on the counter. Howard, quick while I hold him.
Blackie, but you shouldn't do this. It'll mean trouble.
As much trouble as if your friend walked in here and found a policeman. Here. He sat up. Help me take him into the back room. Quick.
All right, I'll take his feet.
Good. Now let's carry him back behind the curtain. Quick.
All right. Easy there. Now, where do you want him?
On the floor here.
All right. There.
Good. Now, get out there in front. Your friend will be here any minute. I'll wait in there.
All right, but I just hope he doesn't.
Hey, wait a minute. You forgot something.
What is it now?
Oh, nothing important. Just the $5,000. Here, I just got it out of Faraday's pocket. Give it all to the man.
After I do that, what then?
My friend Mary Wesley is waiting outside in my car. After your friend leaves, I'm going to follow him.
Oh, I see. And then...
Oh, all right.
Oh, it's you.
Yeah. Good morning. How's everything?
Fine.
Yeah, fine. Well, that's great. Got the money you owe me?
Yes, here it is.
Oh, good. Thank you. You're a smart guy to pay your debts. See you around.
Yes, I'm afraid so. Blackie, he's gone.
Yes, I got a good look at him, too. I'll see you later, Howard.
Hurry, Blackie, he's getting into a car.
And so am I in a minute. Let's go, Mary.
Okay. I saw a man come out of the candy store just now. Is that the one?
That's the one. He got into that tan coupe up there, and he's pulling away. Let's go after him.
Here we go. And let's hope he doesn't go through any red lights. I'd hate to have to break the law.
I'd like to catch up with him. I'd like to break his jaw.
All right, that's the first portion of A Good Detective Adventure on Boston Blackie from June 18th, 1946, The Hooded Gang, starring Dick Calmar as Boston Blackie. Let's take a break. We have much more coming your way on the WGN Radio Theater. Well, this woke me up. What is this? What is this?
Daft Punk.
Oh, Daft Punk?
Daft Punk.
Seth?
Daft.
Eh?
You want me to tell?
Eh, what'd you say? I can't hear a word you're saying over there, Lisa.
Just go with the flow.
This is like techno punk kind of music, right?
Daft Punk.
Yeah, sure.
It's like techno punk. Punk.
Punk.
You're such a punk. You're techno punk.
You're a punky kid.
I know. Punky Brewster.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
Remember that show?
Sure, of course.
Punky Brewster.
Yes.
My daughter loved Punky Brewster.
She was feisty.
Yeah. 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 There was another show that my daughter used to watch all the time, The Big Comfy Couch. Remember that show?
Oh,
she made me watch it all the time with her.
Like a little kid show?
Was,
like,
yeah.
Like on Channel 11, like a WTTW show?
And then when she grew up, I continued to watch it.
You still watch it now?
I don't remember that show.
The Big Comfy Couch.
I know
yeah.
The name,
it was a good.
They had like a little doll.
No, it was like a girl, and she had a giant couch,
yeah.
You know, and she would sometimes hide under the couch and stuff.
Yeah, that sounds like a great show. That's really
it's not
good.
As good of a show as Boston Blackie,
no,
I'll tell
definitely
you that right
not.
Now for sure. Hey, just a quick reminder, folks, we have a website, WGN Radio Theater, and we also have a Facebook and a Twitter, whatever a Twitter is. So Facebook, you just go on to Facebook and just search WGN Radio Theater, and it'll take you to our Facebook. And I don't know what the Twitter is all about, so not even a Trump does, though. He Twitters a lot. He'll wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and Twitter.
Luckily, this is not a political show, so we're gonna leave that aside
we don't talk
pure
politics.
Entertainment.
We don't talk politics here because Lisa and I are polar opposites when it comes to our politics.
So we're better off just focusing on classic
I'll bet you
radio.
Most of our listeners could tell.
Really?
Yeah, our political affiliation.
Do you think?
By saying that you and I are completely opposite.
I don't know. Do you think?
We're pretty similar. I mean, we're pretty on the same page with things, you
yeah,
and I. We're
definitely.
The best friends, Lisa
yeah,
and I.
Yeah, definitely.
But not when it comes to politics.
No, we went different
so
ways.
So we don't talk
but
politics
But here's the
too
good
often.
News. We still like each other.
Yeah.
We can respect each other
yeah,
and have
respect.
A different choice. And
sure.
That's the way it goes.
You know? I can't help it that you don't know
I
what you're talking
you
about when
know
it comes
what you're
to
talking
politics.
About. What can I say?
All right, let's get back to this. The Hooded Gang from 1946. Here's the conclusion to Boston Blackie.
He isn't driving terribly fast, Blackie.
Nobody realizes he's being followed. He brought us out into the country to try to shake us. Uh-oh, he's speeding up.
Well, we can do the same.
Careful, Mary. This road has a lot of nasty turns.
Yeah, I know, but I can go as fast as our friend in front of us.
Sure. We don't want to lose him. I've got to make him talk about that gang of his. And I'd rather lose him than our lives. Hey, he's coming to that bridge, and he's not going to make the turn. Mary, slow down.
I will. Oh, good heavens.
He's on the bridge.
All right.
Come on, let's go in.
I'm right behind you.
Come on.
Whoo! What a smash-up. You can hardly tell that's a car.
And our friend is inside there, too.
Oh, look, Blackie, what's in the road here? It's a hotel key.
I'll take that. Only it probably means nothing. I can just get this door open. There. Whew. Good thing you're a nurse, Mary. This fellow needs...
A nurse?
No, an undertaker, Mary. He's dead. And so are we. He was our only clue to the extortion gang.
A gang of extortionists has demanded $5,000 from Ernie Howard, operator of a candy store. The gang threatens to kill Howard's wife unless he pays or if he goes to the police. So Howard goes to Blackie, who gives him the money. After a brief altercation with Faraday in Howard's store, Blackie waits until the money is paid and then follows the extortionist in his car. But in an attempt to escape, the gangster wrecks his car and is killed. As we return to our story, Blackie and Mary are driving back from the scene of the fatal accident.
Too bad that man was killed, Blackie.
Too bad in more ways than one, Mary. He's not only dead, but we've lost our best lead to that gang of extortionists.
Can we find another lead?
I don't know. I hope so. Because until we do, this gang can go right on shaking down storekeepers and maybe killing them, too. You know, I think I'll try the key we found at the accident.
Do you think it's the key to the dead man's room?
Well, we found it just outside the wrecked car. There's a good chance that it's his. It says the Maxwell Hotel.
Where's that?
Down in the lower part of the city. Say, drive me down there, Mary, will you? Then go home and wait to hear from me. This key may open the door that may help me close this case. Mary, this is Blackie.
Oh, hello, Blackie. Find anything in that hotel room?
Plenty, Mary, plenty. In fact, I'm still here.
Why?
Waiting for a phone call.
Oh, darling, why a phone call?
When after what I found here.
What have you found?
First of all, a mask and a number.
A mask?
Yeah. In fact, it's a hood. Covers the whole face except for two small holes for the eyes.
Well, what do you suppose that's for?
I don't know exactly. But Howard told me that none of the extortion gang knew each other. It could be they wear masks to their meetings.
Oh, I see.
And our dead friend was number one.
Oh. Well, what are you going to do?
Well, number one made a collection today, $5,000. Unless he's the boss will either come here or phone here and arrange to get the money. So I'm going to wait here for that call.
All right, Blackie, but be careful, darling.
Sure, I will. Oh, but look, do me a favor right away, will you?
Sure.
Phone Faraday and tell him about the accident out in the country.
What if he's already found out about it?
Well, if he has, tell him not to release the name of the dead man until I say so.
Blackie, what are you up to?
Oh, nothing serious, Mary. Just an impersonation in case the boss calls. And I don't think even I could give a very good impersonation of a man the boss knows is dead.
Oh, I get it. And the boss will have no way of knowing number one is dead if the inspector doesn't release his name.
My, but you're smart. I heard enough of his voice to imitate it, I hope. Well, call Faraday right away, will you?
Oh, sure, right away. And then where can I reach you later?
Right here. Room 928 at Maxwell. Bye.
Bye.
Hello?
Hello, Carlton?
Yes.
This is me. You know who. Did you collect from Howard?
Yes?
Good. We're meeting tonight. Bring the money and don't forget to wear your mask.
All right. Where are we meeting? The same place?
Yes, same place.
Think that's smart?
Sure. Why not?
Howard may be yelping now. The heat may be on. Maybe somebody saw us at the old spot. I think we ought to meet at a new place.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
It'd be safer.
Sure, good idea. Where do you want to meet?
You're the boss, aren't you? You name it.
All right. We'll make it in the empty house at the crossroads of Cheever Lane. 9 o'clock. That's a long drive. You'd better leave right away. All right?
The empty house at the crossroads of Cheever Lane at 9 o'clock. I'll be there.
Faraday speaking.
Inspector Faraday, this is Mary Wesley.
You've got a nerve calling me, Miss Wesley, when your pal Blackie practically kidnapped me today.
Inspector, if he did, it was for your own good. And also, if you don't want Blackie killed, you'll have to do something for me.
I sure don't want Blackie killed. I want the pleasure of killing him myself.
Listen, Inspector Faraday. There was an auto accident on the Glenmore Road about 11 o'clock this morning. A man was killed.
So what?
So when you get the report, don't release the name of the dead man. Or Blackie will be one, too.
What are you talking about?
The dead man is a member of an extortion gang. And Blackie is trying to take his place so he can catch the head man. Now, if the leader knows that his man is dead, Blackie will be in trouble.
You tell Blackie to let the police handle things like this.
Too late, Inspector. Blackie may already have contacted the boss.
No.
All right. I have to spend all my time getting that guy out of jams. I won't release the name, Miss Wesley.
Oh, thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Rollins! Rollins, come in here!
Yes, Inspector?
Rollins, phone the Accident Bureau. Tell them not to release the name of the man killed in that wreck on the Glenmore Road.
Huh? The Accident Bureau called here over an hour ago, Inspector, and we released the name to the papers right away.
What?
Well, that's what we always do, Inspector.
I know, but we don't always have Boston Blackie to worry about. Get Mary Wesley on the phone, quick. And get me a squad car right away. Hop in, Miss Wesley. Did you get a hold of Blackie?
No, Inspector Faraday. I phoned the Maxwell Hotel as soon as I got your call, but the room didn't answer.
Oh, that's bad. Maxwell Hotel, Rollins. We'll try to pick up Blackie's trail from there. And turn on that siren.
Yes, sir.
Hardman, quiet. Quiet. We're meeting in a new place tonight, thanks to the brilliant judgment of number one. He feels that perhaps our former meeting place might have been spotted. We wouldn't want that.
We make a big haul with our collections, boss.
We'll go into that in a moment, number five.
Well, I got 10,000. Two stops, two collections.
All of the men got at least that much. We're doing quite well, number five.
Hey, look, boss, do we always got to wear these masks at these meetings? This is a good setup, only it's creepy.
Oh? You think we ought to wear masks, don't you, number one?
Yeah.
You wouldn't want one of our weaker members in a weaker moment to turn us over to the police, would you, number one?
No.
What's the matter with you, number one? You haven't much to say, and your tongue is usually rather glib.
I don't have much to say.
Why not?
I listen better than I talk.
So it seems. We were more than an hour late in getting this meeting started. You seem to prefer to listen at all that time. What are you listening for, number one?
Nothing. Just listening.
Oh, you must be listening for something.
No, only to hear what you have to say.
You're sure you can hear well?
Yeah.
Sure you feel well?
Why, yeah.
That's amazing, number one. I expected you to be at least a little bit shaken up.
Shaken up? By what?
That accident.
Accident?
Yes. The one in which you were killed.
Killed?
Yes. How does it feel to be dead?
There must be some mistake.
There's no mistake. I heard it on the radio. This meeting was delayed while I went to the morgue to identify your body. I was quite certain you were in no condition to attend this meeting.
Hey, look, boss, if number one is dead, who's this guy?
This guy, number five, is the one who talked to me over the phone as number one several hours after number one was dead. I have a rather strong suspicion he's Boston Blackie. But Boston Blackie or not, he's an imposter. But what do you think we ought to do with imposters? Don't reach for your gun, Blackie. Mine is already in my hand.
So I see.
Good. I asked you a moment ago how it felt to be dead, and you didn't know.
No, I didn't, but I suppose maybe I'm going to in a moment.
Yes, but suppose you take off your mask. I'd like to see whom I'm going to kill.
All right. Fair. It is Boston Blackie.
Oh,
thanks for the flattery, number five. I didn't know my face was so well known.
Hey, boss, this guy knows about us. Maybe the cops know, too.
I don't think so. Boston Blackie doesn't work with the police. They didn't follow you yet, did they, Blackie?
I wouldn't know.
Would you know? You don't have a chance to survive the next 60 seconds.
You're going to kill me here?
Here. Why not?
No particular reason. I simply imagined that I would die in much more pleasant surroundings.
Turn around.
What for?
Turn around. You're the kind who ought to be shot in the back. Don't reach for your gun, Owen!
Hey, it's a cop! The police!
Be it!
Okay. Get out,
Blackie! And you'll still get it!
Your aim is bad when you're excited.
All right, everybody, stand where you are! Stand where you are!
Hello, Faraday.
Hello, Blackie. You all right?
I'm not only all right, I'm amazed. How did you find me here?
That was easy. Just a little smart investigating, that's all. All right, man, get these guys out of here. I don't want to see them again until they're in the lineup without their masks.
Here I am, Mary.
Oh,
a scratch on me.
Oh, Blackie, that taxi driver was telling the truth.
What taxi driver?
Oh, never mind what taxi driver. Let's get out of here.
Oh, I get it now, Faraday. It was a little smart investigating that found me, huh? Why any two-year-old could check with the cabs at the stand at the Hotel Maxwell and find out I'd been brought here.
Okay, but does it matter how I found you? I found you. And that's what counts.
You don't know how that does count, Faraday. Next time there's a party in your honor, count me in, because you're the only reason our hooded friends didn't count me out.
Well, there you have it. Boston Blackie with the Hooded Gang. June 18th, 1946 was the original broadcast date. Dick Calmar as Boston Blackie, and that was Leslie Woods playing his girlfriend Mary Wesley, and Maurice Tarplin as the good Inspector Faraday on that, as heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Tell you what's coming up next week. Oh, what's this?
Summer loving happened so fast.
See, Lisa can sing.
Met a girl, crazy for me.
I met a boy, cute as can be.
Summer days drifting away. Summer nights. What a willa willa hoot.
Yeah, it's a great movie,
it's a
man.
Great stuff.
We were talking
about Olivia Newton-John with Nick DiGilio.
She's so cute.
She really is something.
And John Travolta
in this movie.
He did a great job in this movie, right?
I mean, this is really an iconic film.
I think he did Saturday Night Fever first, and then this movie came out.
Yes.
And then he did Blowout, I think, right? Hang on a second. I'm going to get Nick DiGilio, because Nick will know.
Get the movie expert.
There was three movies that he had to do, right?
Okay, he broke out with Saturday Night Fever.
Right.
Obviously. He was in Carrie.
Was that like 1976?
77.
77.
Carrie was in 76.
Ah, Carrie was first, right.
Yeah. Yeah. So Carrie was first. 77 was Saturday Night Fever. 78 was Grease. 80 was Urban Cowboy.
Urban Cowboy.
And then Blowout, which I think is the best performance of his career, tanked in 81.
I think the best performance of his career is the Quentin Tarantino
Pulp
movie,
Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
He's great in it.
I mean, he's great. I mean, he's really great
in that
movie.
You know what? He's in a new movie, a Western right now, called In the Valley of Violence.
Uh-huh.
And it's Ethan Hawke.
Yeah.
He plays the evil marshal of this small town.
Oh, wow.
One of his best performances in years, Travolta. Great in it. It's available on video on demand, and it played the music box for a couple of weeks.
Now, I'm going to tell you a movie. Let's see if we are on the same page with this one.
Okay.
His worst performance by far of any. I mean, it's so bad that it's actually, it can't even watch it.
There's a lot of them. He made a lot of bad movies.
Well, I'm going to tell you the worst one in my opinion.
Okay.
The Punisher.
Yeah, no, that's bad.
Would you have to agree
with
me on that?
Well, you know, I mean, he did a lot of bad movies. There was a stretch where he was just doing
it. But, I mean, it's like he can't even act in that movie.
Did you see The Taking of Pelham 123, the remake?
Yes.
Terrible.
Terrible. We're going to come back and talk with Nick, but we got a quick break. We'll be right back. It's interesting. You know, sometimes actors are just wonderful in movies. Like another guy that I think is brutal in some movies and he's amazing in others is the guy, from Speed.
Keanu Reeves?
Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Sometimes he's great, and other times he's just brutal.
I'm a huge Keanu Reeves fan.
Yeah.
I am.
But, I mean, you got to admit, sometimes.
He should not do period films.
Yeah.
He was terrible in Dangerous Liaisons. He was terrible in Dracula.
Yeah, terrible.
You know, like.
I'll tell you another one he was really bad in. Really, really bad. Devil's Advocate.
See, I like that movie.
But he's bad in it.
I thought he was good.
Oh, God.
And Pacino's screaming.
Can't even watch it.
I like that movie, man. I do.
Yeah. Oh, man. Some actors, I guess, you know, it has a lot to do with the director. It really does.
Sure.
Because being in the film business, and I know you're in the business as well, a director is everything to an actor. I mean, because the director's telling you, yeah, this is what I want, you know? And you don't know. You're not watching the dailies. I mean, if you watch the dailies, it messes you all up. Mm-hmm. So you're staying away from all that, and you're thinking, hey, I'm putting in a great performance here. And
not
sometimes,
always.
Whew, yeah. Brutal.
Yeah.
So what's on the show?
Movie reviews with Eric and Colin. And my dad's going to call in and tell a joke.
Yep.
We're going to talk about brushes with famous people. Like if you've ever had a brush with famous people. There's a couple of stories in the news about that.
Oh, like, yeah, when you run into a famous person.
Yeah, and then Esmeralda and I are going to
I was thinking I was going to brush my hair with a famous person.
No, unless that's your thing.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know, Carl.
Well, we all have our things.
To each his own, man. I don't know.
We all have our things.
Yeah.
I don't even want to start with that one.
And then Esmeralda and I are going to play another round of Celebrity Name Game.
Oh, very cool. All right, so. Stick around for Nick DiGilio. He is up next. When we come back here next week, Lisa and I will be here Saturday and Sunday, and we have a good lineup for you. I know it's here somewhere. Yes, you got it, Lisa? Our Miss Brooks, and then Suspense. And then we'll tune into the Harold Perry Show. Then it's the Aldrich Family, the Great Gildersleeve, and Father Knows Best. These are all Thanksgiving shows.
Nice.
Six Thanksgiving shows next Saturday and Sunday. And then on Thanksgiving, we're honored to be here on Thanksgiving, Lisa and I, for 2 hours from 9 o'clock till 11 p.m. And we're going to have two more Thanksgiving shows for our listeners. We're going to have some turkey and then come over here. And then I'll
try not to fall asleep.
And then I'll hang out with a turkey.
Oh, hello.
Lisa Wolf. Hang on a second.
His jokes are a little old, but we're just going to pretend to laugh.
So stick around for Nick DiGilio. He is up next. It's been a pleasure doing the show, and thank you, Elif Garris.